Hello and welcome to the TT Podcast, the podcast where we talk to one person from the world of the TT to discuss their lives, their journeys and their ambitions with the greatest motorsporting event in the world. And I'm joined by the greatest motorsporting pundit in the world, Steve Plater.
It's good to be back. A new look, a relaxed look.
For those not watching on TT Plus, we are in a brand new studio.
We've got a couple of sofa. Well, we've got a sofa and a chair. Bit of brickwork. McGuinness has been in, obviously. Brooke Bond. Good to be back and looking forward to the guests.
What's Brooke Bond?
Oh, you wouldn't understand. You've never done day's work, have you?
Never. Where have you been? What have you been up to?
Been busy doing the usual things. Obviously, I've missed an awful lot. The ones you recorded at the Manx. But no, good to be back. Actually, I haven't listened to any.
Well, there's no point
doing
asking.
I've been away.
Asking which one was your favourite then, is there?
No, far from it, no. Oh, if I was feeling left out.
If you want to know from me, Cam Donalds, that was my favourite.
Was it?
Yeah, phenomenal. I like that man. Is that it? Let's. It's like he's never been away. Steve, let's talk about our guest that's coming on from Cam Donald, old school to the new school, Ryan Kringle.
Yep, tough year for him. Last year, 23 at the TT as a newcomer, yeah, lots of things went wrong, but I'm sure he's going to tell us all, you know, and I'm kind of half surprised he's coming back for 2024.
I know, after all those troubles. Phenomenally fast kid, though. When I first saw him at TT 2023, I'll be honest, obviously Jamie, his brother, had started the year before, so I was like, this youngster is trying to follow in his brother's footsteps, and Jamie had a really good year. I wasn't expecting Ryan to, I don't want to say dominate his brother, but He kind of surpassed him relatively quickly, didn't he?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's always going to be a bit of needle anyway, you know, yeah. a bit of competition in the family. But, you know, he's a man of many talents and I'm looking forward to listening just to see his output.
What does that mean, his output? All right, Steve, I don't know what it means by his output, but let's see what his output is. Come and join me on this sofa and we'll get Ryan in. Ryan Kringle, born in 1993, 6 TT starts, 5 TT finishes, and he is the 5th fastest TT newcomer behind the likes of Peter Hickman, Davey Todd, Josh Brooks, and Glenn Irwin, to name all 4 of the people that are in front of him. He's got a fastest lap of 120.096, and this man is a full-time grounds worker, construction extraordinaire. Ryan Kringle, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the new studio as well. You're the first guest in this brand new studio. Do you like it? I decorated it myself.
Yeah, it's good. I'm not liking it. Yeah.
What you're in the building game. What about the brickwork behind you?
Solid, that, innit? That's not falling down anytime soon.
You've been back on the trial, have you, Steve?
A Brooke Bond, that one, mate.
It's nice. Well done, Steve. Yeah. Hey, Ryan, quick question before we get into the main question. Do you listen to the TT podcast? Have you listened to it?
I do. So recently I've been doing a lot of cycling at home on Swift and I've been listening to the podcast each week they come out, and if I can't wait, I go into TT Plus and put the next one on. Barty and who was the latest one?
McCallum.
No, the one before.
Oh, Cam.
Yes.
Donald.
Cameron, yeah. I grew up watching him and took an interest to his one, yeah.
Would you say that's your favourite?
I don't know. Yeah, I like the stories and how hard he pushed as a newcomer everywhere he went and took the risk and, you know, paid off for him. I mean, obviously, he'd done really well.
Yeah. It's a shame you weren't there for that one, Steve, because that was a good one.
Sorry.
Anyway, pastor's new. Is that the right saying? Pastor's
new. Feels
like
my first time in a studio.
It's weird, isn't it? Anyway, let's get on with this podcast and our guest, Ryan Kringle. Ryan, if you've heard the podcast, you'll know that we start the podcast with the same question to riders, team managers, people that stand at the side of the road and watch. And it's happened to you on 6 occasions now, so you're pretty new to this. So it'll be quite a visceral experience, I dare say, for you. But rolling through no man's land, you get that approach where your team and your mechanics all kind of wave you off. You roll through to the arch. You get the starter's hand grasping on your shoulder. What's going through your mind at that point before that flag drops, before you get that tap on the shoulder?
Honestly, once you go through no man's land, as they say, there's nothing going through your head anymore. It's just what's in front of you and you're getting ready to go. And then for me, as Steve will remember this, the old bridge that used to go across to the cemetery that's no longer there, I can still visualise that. And when the rider in front was getting towards there, I knew it was near enough time for me to go, so that's when I started picking up the res and get ready to go.
Was there a bridge there?
Yeah, back in the day, used to have the red lights on for the end of practice to guard you back in.
What was it like? Yeah. That, obviously, it was your first time there last year, you know, 23. What was it like for your first start?
Yeah, so I just...
Was you a bag of nerves? Were you, you know, not knowing what to expect? Or was it just kind of... Or was you... Because obviously you're a local, you roughly know where you're going.
Yeah, so as far as track-wise, like, going back years, I wanted to go and do the Manx, and my dad always said, just hold back, and I did, and then I didn't feel the time's right to come and do it, and I always said, if the time's right, I'll come, and if I don't, I won't, and don't know, I watched my brother set off the year before as a newcomer, and then the worst thing that happened last year for me was me and Jamie qualified on the same time, so unfortunately our first race was the Supersport race, and Jamie was rolling out in front of me, and although I loved being on track together with him, I just didn't want to be on track with him at all, and both races, and I caught him in Ramsey, so it was quite weird, but I could come up onto the crank of body in both races, I could just see him peeling off, it was nice to know. Yeah, you'd see him as good.
You didn't want to go off behind him because you're scared you couldn't keep up? Or? How competitive is it between the two of you?
He's so laid back. He just, he's got fire, and it's weird because one day he'll have so much fire and determination to be anyone, and he can do it. And the next day he's just so laid back. You never know what you're going to get with him. So, obviously, I want to beat him and he wants to beat me, but it's not too competitive between us, but as long as we're both safe, we're happy.
Let's rewind now, because although you're a local lad to the island, the TT wasn't, and I think we spoke about this at TT23 when we sat down, it wasn't really on your horizon. Motocross was your sport, was your passion, was your love. So take us back to those first days in motocross. How did you get started? Why did you get started? Was it something that you were always going to pursue, or...?
So it's always been a family thing. Like, my dad grew up going through different sports like I have now, and something I enjoyed. I went to British as a kid on motocross. And
did all right as well, didn't you?
Yeah, it's going all right. And then, I don't know, things like we got, I don't know, small way 85 days, we 10, 12, I don't know, and just started to phase out, and I just started doing local stuff. And then, fortunately, my cousin done that Triumph Triple Challenge the first year it came around, and that ran alongside the Aprilia, so my dad just said, throw a bike in if you want to have a go. And I went and had a go at that, and honestly, I was no cop at it at all. And because I was that bad, I just threw that back in the corner and went back to my motocross. And then I was fortunate enough in 2013, I wanted to come back and have another go at road racing, and thought the time was right. And somebody put a Kawasaki big bike under me, which is, had a superbike engine, maybe not the right thing at the time, but it was what I was offered to go and race, and I took it back, took it. So we had a good year that year, to be fair, and went going forward. I just thought, this is it. And unfortunately, that deal broke apart at the end of that year due to finances, like a lot of things. And I scratched again for the next couple of years. But, here we are today. We kept the ball rolling.
All right. But let's go back to that first time on that. So it would have been an Aprilia RS125.
Yeah.
You would have come from motocross where you've been riding two strokes. So two strokes weren't alien to you,
no.
I guess. Riding on the road and competing on the road must have been completely different. Wheels staying in line, plenty of grip, plenty of traction. You said you weren't very good, but how crap was not very good? Were you at the back of the grid? Were you struggling to qualify? Could you not get a grip on the bike? What was it?
No, it's like 20 to 30s and stuff. And, I was giving my dad, that would give me incentives of some money if I went a bit quicker, you get this and get that. And, as they do, but it just did not click with me at all. And no matter how much I felt like I was pushing it a bit, but I was just, nothing was clicking, nothing was coming to me. So I only spent a year at it and probably didn't take it serious enough at the time, I don't know.
And were you enjoying it or not?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but it's hard to enjoy riding around 20th, isn't it? So, and there's other lads who I'm friends with who done the same jump at the same time, and they were battling for the win, and it didn't hurt me, but it's just like, there's not much going on for me, and I still had my motocross bike in them years as well, and I go back home, do local motocross, and towards the front again, I get a better buzz out of it. So at that point, I just thought I'd gone away from it again.
And is there any thoughts at that point, like most kids who take up motorbiking, I want to go MotoGP, I want to be world motocross champion or supercross champion or anything like that, or were you just enjoying it?
No, nothing like that. I've always been very competitive. I still am very competitive, but I'm very grounded as well, and you know, I know what it takes to go and do that kind of thing, and that, you know, I don't think I'll ever achieve that, and I didn't think I'd come to the TT either in them days. So I'm happy with what I've done, and maybe, yeah, I could have, like, I've got friends around me who've gone on to World Series and stuff, but I didn't pursue it, is basically what happened.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing to be grounded? Because...
Oh, like, to be honest, it must be fairly good, because my younger days, my dad grounded me that flipping much. I didn't turn out that bad.
No. I think there's a completely different meaning behind it. You were never not grounded, I bet, as a kid. I bet you were an absolute nightmare as a kid.
Get out.
I bet you were.
No.
I bet you were.
No, I was a good boy.
But what I'm saying is, like, when you're kids, you have these massive aspirations of these dreams that are so grandiose that you need that to kind of press on. And I wonder if you were like, I want to be motocross world champion.
Yeah, no, nothing like that.
Would you have that so much delusion that you were that good that you could get through and progress?
No, but like even back to a few years ago, like, I really struggled with my ability. I don't think I can ride a bike to maybe the ability I can. Like, yeah. I remember I've only been to Spain testing once, and I went out, and suddenly in track day, I can't remember who it was with now, but we turned up, and I was like, oh, I'm in the advanced group here, you know, I'm well out of my depth, and, you know, you go out there and you're one of the quickest. It's like, well, like, okay, but I worry too much about things, and I just need to get on with it. And
well, that's it, yeah. Is it fifth quickest TT newcomer?
Yeah.
Behind, let's go through them, Hickey, Davy Todd, Josh Brooks, who's the other?
Glenn Irwin,
yeah.
And then you. And yet you go in, oh, yeah, I don't think I'm good enough for this.
No. Yeah, I don't know when it's coming in. The team's like, oh, you've just done that. And I was like, all right, okay. Just, it is what it is, you know. Just, they don't get hooked up on stuff.
Yeah.
If you're not winning, you know, well, you are happy, but you're not.
It's tough in this game, though, isn't it?
you mentioned your cousin racing triumphs earlier. Who's your cousin?
Mark Kringle.
Now, is that it? The three of you in your family circle or any others that race or ride? So it's quite a family thing.
No, yeah, my cousin. I've got another cousin, Kyle. He races as well. He's just recently gone to tarmac as well now, so God knows where he'll end up. But again, he's another talent on the bike as well.
Is
so.
He a Kringle?
No, he's a Casement, but he's all.
Kyle.
Yeah,
Kyle Kringle sounds like a. He sounds like a proper doer, doesn't he? If anyone's going to make it, he's going to make it.
Yeah, no, it's always been a big, you know, family affair. We've always went away together racing motocross. Everything was always, it was good.
Yeah.
So TT23, obviously newcomer, you know, you roughly know your way around because you live there.
Yeah.
Not that it's anything like the same at pace of a TT bike, of a race bike, but, you know, you only really concentrated on one size bike, and was that for any reason in particular? I know you're riding most classes for 24, that's your plan.
Yeah, so initially I spoke to the guys at Barty and Milky, and they just said, we want you to come, and we want you to come on your big bike, nothing else, so... I was a little bit gutted by that. I was like, I really enjoy my 600 as much as I enjoy my big bike, but the big bike's the challenge, and that's what, if I had to choose, I'd choose it. So we came with that, and then the week before, we had a race at a local track, and my big bike was just already in the midst of getting ready for Bray Hill, and I just enjoyed it so much in the 600. I rang them and said, look, is there any chance I can get a 600 ride? And obviously, people had mishaps at the Northwest, so I knew people weren't turning up, and they turned around and said, we'll give you a ring back tomorrow. Well, yeah, we're left 6 days with a bike to rebuild again, get ready for Bray Hill. You know, I was fortunate I'd had that, because I had all the problems with the big bike that still allowed me to get some track time in.
Yeah, you did have some problems. How many problems did you have? That it was a baptism of fire on every front. I think every time I walked past the garage, that bike was stripped down.
Oh, man. So the mileage on the engine at the time was nowhere near due anything, so I've got a theory in my head, if it's not broke, don't fix it, you know, just let's crack on with this job. I've had no issues with that bike all the way up till TT. In hindsight, I parked it at the final round before TT at the local club event. I didn't ride it, which if I did, it might highlight these problems. But so the first day of practice, we set off, and because the bike had been a bit one cent for the newcomers lap with Milky, and I got off the grandstand straight away, and the quick shift wasn't working. I was like, oh, here we go, it's going to be a long lap. And then, as stupid as it is, rolling the throttle and using the clutch to go down gears again, it took me a lot to get used to it again. So we came in, we rectified that problem pretty quick, but we got straight out in the 600 then. And when we went back out, I'd done a lap, and it kept jumping out of gear, and I just thought, it's me not concentrating enough on the bike, too much going on. So I went back out and I came out of quarter bridge and I jumped out of gear again between third and fourth. And then I thought, give it one last go. And we came up Pal Hutchin up towards thing, and it jumped out again. So I just pulled straight off the track when I got to Balagueri, because last thing I wanted was a gearbox locking up around there. Yeah. So that lost me Monday straight away. And then Tuesday, the thing was in bits. We couldn't get the shells when we stripped it. It needed shells. We got a gearbox, but it needed shells, but we couldn't get any on our own until Friday of practice week. So that would have been my TT over on a big bike.
Hold on. Sorry, Ryan.
What are shells?
Are they them bits that go in your at the top end?
It's what you collect on the beach. A little walk.
It's not a stupid question.
No, it's a good question. They're the bits that go around the flipping crankshaft, basically the bearings of the bike.
Right, yeah. I thought they were them little
big end bearings.
Big
end bearings, yeah.
Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah.
So the shells, it needed new shells.
So it needed new shells, unfortunately. We couldn't get any, so I left in a hole and spoke to a few people, borrowed some money and went and bought a bike the next day, which I didn't get till 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again. Sorry. And I know everyone's listening to this wanting to hear the story, but you can't... What do you mean you just go and borrow some money and buy a bike? How does that happen at the TT?
Unfortunately, I've got good friends in good places, and it's 2 weeks of the year, and people are like, you're absolutely mad borrowing this money doing this. I was like, no, this 2 weeks doesn't stop for me. You know, I'm here, and I'm a newcomer this year, and I'm doing this. So I did put myself in a hole, definitely did, but that was something to worry after the event, not during it, so...
Was that on the island that you bought the bike then?
Yeah.
Right.
So bought the bike, and then the first proper run we got on was Wednesday night, because Tuesday night we had the oil spill at the bottom of the Garro, and my big bike wasn't ready for Tuesday. So I was thinking we'd get a couple laps of 600, I'd be okay. And I probably didn't deal at the best. Someone bottomed out through the Garro, put oil everywhere, and straight away they cancelled the 600 session, so I didn't get out and put the sidecars out. And I just, it just really annoyed me that I didn't get on track that night, because the previous years, the newcomers could go on a 600 in any session, and they didn't allow me to go, so I was annoyed that I didn't get any laps on Tuesday. And then, but you learn by that. And Wednesday was my first proper run, new bike, new everything. So I got up to, you know, yourself, Steve, coming out of Sarah's cottage, is it, in Glen Helen, you know, the change of direction before you come up to the Cranker Vodden.
Yeah,
I've never been that physical on a bike changing direction. I could feel a pull on my muscle on my right arm, and I just blew up straight away. And by the end time I got to the end of Sulby Straight, I couldn't feel the front brake leaving. At the time, the plan was to go straight for two laps just to get used to it. And I was like, I'm in danger zone now, but the fastest way to the bits here is on the track. And fortunately, with my number being so high as a newcomer, there's no one behind me on the track. I knew that. So I cruise around, I come in and say, oh, what's wrong with you? You just done under 16. You know, it's good enough on your first proper lap on a big bike. And I said, I can't hold on to the thing. And then
that was with arm pump all the way from body straight.
Yeah, they just had to.
That's a long way.
Yeah, it's a long way, and I was more worried about people behind me catching me than anything else. But
you're only flipping sort of 10, 11 miles into a 37 mile lap, you know. It's
exactly that. But then I just thought, if you pull off and go, you know, around the long way, there's no way you're going to get back out today. So I just persevered with it, got around. Then I had a break, went back out, and same happened again the second lap. But you know, fortunately, after the Wednesday night of practice, it blew it out, and I didn't get it again for the rest of the fortnight. And
do you think that was down to you hanging on too tight, a little nervous, or was it just a physical thing?
Yeah, I think definitely holding on too tight. Like, I've never ran a bump stop behind my seat, to wedge myself in or anything like that. And obviously the speeds, I'm not used to it whatsoever, because I've done no other roads whatsoever, just done straight to the TT. And yeah, just the arm pump, it was a thing. But Thursday, I didn't get it. I mean, I think we went out Thursday night, and I did struggle to set up with lack of time, and the bike was doing a lot of weaving. My first lap on Thursday night was 120 stand and start, and then I went straight through for 120 on a flyer. And that's the night we spoke to Cam. You know, everything was going well, and we went back out and done another 120 stand and start out of the pits. So it was a good night. So Friday, another good night of practice, so we went a little bit faster again. And then we came to Sunday. So this bike was, we bought the bike Wednesday, we came to Sunday, and I was coming on the approach to Kirkmichael, it wheelied off the top, and I don't know how you were with this, but I struggled to look at my dashboard and go around, because that many things going on. I just seen a load of lights going nuts at me. I was like, what's going on here? So I see my temperature just jump, and it wasn't just like by one or two, it was jumping like 5, 10. I was like, what, 140 degrees here? This isn't good.
Wow, bloody hell.
So pulled in at Douglas Road corner, and I looked down, and I could see a Jubilee clip that was snapped, hanging half out my belly pan. It dumped its load of water, and only recently managed to get that engine fixed, but it warped the head, it warped the barrel, you know. It's
been hot.
Yeah, done a lot of damage. And at the site, I just thought, like, where I stopped, I thought, I'll let it cool down, I'll go back on the back roads, and I kept firing up, and it was dropping, but the bike would fire up, no problem. And then I found the hose was fully off and it had no water, and so obviously I just parked it, I didn't go anywhere. We got back and put water in it and tried to fire up, and the engine was just real tight on the start and wouldn't fire again, so just thought, we're in for more problems. And unfortunately that night, this was Sunday, so we had to pull the engine to bits on that bike. And
was that the big bike, sorry?
Yeah.
So that was the one that you just bought?
Just bought. So this bike had a full engine refresh prior to me buying it, and pull it apart, and basically I wrecked that one as well. So it was two engines down, two chassis sat there. So fortunately, I've got a good mechanic, Andy, behind me, and he made a good engine out of the two. We had it back in the chassis for the Superstock race on Tuesday, which that all went good. And then the Thursday, that's when I came out, and we'd done 126 on my last lap on the stock race, and still really, really struggled handling the bike. And like we said about my previous background, motocross, I don't mind a bike jumping or moving or that, but I just could not get the thing to be planted to the ground. And I spoke to somebody after the race, probably shouldn't say his name because he's on his tyres, and he said, get yourself off them, get yourself on these, and it's going to make a big difference for the senior. So I went into the senior, a very tired boy, but, you know, I came out and done a 125.8 standing start on some Dunlops, and the difference, I actually done the warm-up that morning as well, and as soon as I came out of Braddon Bridge on the run to Snugborough, the bike was just planted, and I can still feel it today. My arms relaxed on the handlebars, and I was just like, we can go today.
This is the way it should feel.
This is the way it should feel, but again, I've got to do the rest of the lap now, get back to the pit for the start.
What did you have? What tyres did you have on before that? Knobblers?
Yeah.
Off your motocross bike.
Yeah. No, it was all good. Yeah, we've run the Metal, which is still a very, very good tyre. And like I'd not use anything but Metal and Pirelli on circuits. That's what I still use today. And I don't know what it was. Like, I had good people behind me with good setups, and it just wouldn't. It just constantly had a weave to the handlebar, and sometimes Solby, before we got to the new patches hard this year, it was getting too much where it's gonna go wrong. Like, it's starting from a weave to get further and further.
Faster as well.
I just praying to see, as soon as I could see the change of colour on tarmac, I knew I was okay. So it's what we do, isn't it? But when we put these other tyres in, there's no looking back now. We've got a good base for this year.
It was planted, it was solid, you didn't get the weave.
Didn't get it whatsoever, and the other tyres were slightly spinning out of corner, so then when it was spinning, it was causing the shock to pump, and I couldn't get the power down. So, I don't think it's the tyres, or maybe it's my setup. You know, the Metal are a very good tyre, but I just, for me, it didn't work, and I needed to try something else. And I wanted to try something that would make a break this year coming.
For a newcomer, you had quite a task involved. You know, obviously, you know your way around because you live there on the Isle of Man. So probably, you know, that's a trump card as opposed to another newcomer. But there was so many negatives going on with engine problems and bike problems and so on. It does distract you. It really does, you know. So it's a lot to keep you settled and to keep you calm when you finally get out on the course and trying to get a decent result and with a massive learning curve.
It is. I remember, like, the Sunday when it went wrong on the big bike again. I remember just coming back to my own and just put my hands in my head, because I just had another chassis with no engine. And I was like, what am I going to do? Yeah. I just borrowed a load of money and I'm in another hole, you know. And it was hard. It was hard. And I took that hard. But all you can do is touch yourself off, and tomorrow's a new day, and I hope it comes right.
It's hard enough for a factory team or a team that has mechanics that are getting paid enough money to go and do it and stay up, and the rider can remove themselves away from it. But you're involved in it, aren't you? You're helping the mechanics. You're part of that team, really. Doing that.
Maybe that's the problem. The work.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe stay away from the Spanish line.
Luckily, I did. I had good support, so I hired a lad in, who's a good friend of mine, Dan, and he was very good at prepping my bikes and having everything ready. And we own AGR Motorsport as well. So Andy, who works for us, he builds engines. He's done many of engines. He's got many of Manx Grand Prix wins behind him and stuff. You know, he knows what he's doing. So I was lucky to have. So basically, we had Andy in the camp to look after Jamie, and I hired somebody in to look after my stuff. But at the time I hired him, there's only going to be one bike, not the Super Sport as well. And fortunately for me, they both mucked in and it took the stress off me. Yeah. You know, there's so much going on that I didn't want to be at the paddock. I just wanted to be away from the place and just keep myself to myself. And I was turning up late to the paddock every day just to avoid everything.
Yeah.
No, I turned up and the boys had it done for me. I had a pretty stress-free in that sense, really.
Yeah. Like Steve said, it's hard enough going there as a newcomer to concentrate on learning the track. The most important or the hardest part of a newcomer is learning the track. But you've also got in the back of your mind, what's going to go wrong with this bike now? I've had this trouble. Is this all right? Are we going to get through this lap? Are my arms going to start pumping up? Like, I don't think, what's the right turn of phrase, or what am I trying to say? You couldn't have made it any harder for yourself if you tried, could you?
No, it's, but again, it is what it is, isn't it? We can't change these things. These things happen and they set the challenges, but it's all the buts and maybes. If I got a clear practice week, I don't know where I could have ended up. And, you know, we've been, like we said, the fifth fastest, and everyone in the front and behind me, they all rode for proper teams and could back, and I don't know where it could have.
Well, that's
might not have went any better, might have went slower, but.
But that's it. It bodes well to know that you got through all that in TT 2023. Going into 24, if you have half the problems you had this time, you'll have a much clearer head. You've got a year under your belt. Like, what's potentially possible from there?
I think, first of all,
with
quite a negative year, you know, you've decided to go back, which is fabulous, you know, and positive. You must have a positive mental attitude.
Yeah.
But not just that, you went to the Manx and rode a classic superbike as well.
I did, yeah. That, again, was going well, and Ian and the boys at Mistral put a great package together for me, and unfortunately we had this most stupidest thing happen on the last lap of the race. The exhaust bracket snapped, and I actually knew it snapped by Balcrane, because my heel rests on the exhaust, and as I tipped into Balcrane, my heel dropped. I was like, oh, that's not good. I looked down, I was like, yeah, it's definitely snapped, but I tried to be smart about it, and where the marshals weren't, I was looking to make sure it was still safe, because I didn't, obviously the last thing I wanted was falling off. And I made it. I remember going down Bagarra, and the marshals done the pavement staring at me. I was like, oh, don't stand back in, will you? And where was it? I got to the end of Sulby, and I could see it was, they were proper going for me. I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this. And then got into Parliament Square, and there was about four or five of them dotted up the road going nuts. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And I remember getting off, and poor Trevor Marsh was like, you can't go any further. I was like, I've got from Balcrane, I'm okay. He's like, no chance. I had to ride the back road backwards, and then to top that one off, I got to Onken and the bike started stuttering, like I was running out of fuel, but they run a total loss system. So I could see the voltage on my dash slightly going down and down. Yeah. I didn't even make it back to the grandstand. I had to push it the rest of the way. I was like, oh, what a day. But no, I think we were running 7th or 8th at the time. I think we were straight into 7th at Glen Ellen lap on, and that was going well. I was enjoying it, yeah.
What's it like riding one of those old bikes? Because am I right in thinking that bike is probably the same age as you, right?
I think it is the exact same, yeah. So different. Definitely different. I was warned before getting on them, just watch the gearboxes because they aren't very good on them. And even in the races videos, I'm coming to Douglas Road Corner lap on, and it's just in a false neutral, but it won't select the gear, it'll just grind gears. And I'm clutching, just please don't lock. But and then I had it going lap one into the Craig, it done the exact same, but the mechanics had to try and blip the throttle as you're braking to do that. And I was like, blip, brake. I was like, there's a lot going on. So I remember coming down into the Craig lap one, I blipped it, but as I blipped it, I gripped the brake and it stopped me. And I was like, oh, not a tear. it did take a bit of riding, it did, but, you know.
Does it make it easier? Because they're still fast bikes,
yeah,
but not as fast as, obviously, a modern superbike.
Yeah, so
do you approach things a little bit slower and make that easier to, because you're still learning the course at race pace.
Mm. I think it's definitely helped me, because it's very similar speed to 600, as you say, and we ended up doing 120 and a half or something on the 600 this year, and I'd done no revision on that because I didn't think I was riding one. And places like Gorse Lee, I wasn't even when I finished TT on the 600, I was not flat out through there, and I know you should be, but I was just biding my time with it. And on that Mistral bike, before the Manx had ended, I was flat through there, not rolling, so you know, that just brought my confidence up for riding the 600 this year more than anything.
All right, we're going to pause the conversation right there. There's still plenty to discuss in next week's episode, especially TT 2024 and Ryan's obvious love for motocross.
You're not sniffing a return, are you, onto Nobblies and and having a dabble at that as well.
Yes.
I done everything I could last year to get an entry, but they were in between two different rounds, so they didn't pick me email up till too late. So I'd love a go. I would. I won't cross my first love, and it still is. I love it. I always go back to it all the time.
Now, if you want to catch the rest of that episode, it's available to watch right now over on TT Plus. Or alternatively, hit subscribe on this podcast feed to get a notification when the audio drops next week. IOMTTRacers.com is the place to check out all the latest TT news plus information on how to subscribe to TT Plus, which Steve has done, haven't you, Steve? You watch all the content.
I just listen.
Hey, quick one before we go. What's your favourite episode of Between the Hedges so far of Season 2?
God, dear. I like them all.
Great answer. Bye, everyone.